Hello and welcome to the Master of Demon Gorge podcast. Today we're talking about Door Gods. If you've spent much time in the Sinosphere world, you have surely come across Door Gods. Although you might not have recognized them for what they were, maybe you didn't pay much attention, or maybe you noticed them but no one explained them to you. I'm talking about the painted images on people's doors of a pair of military figures. Of course, you see them on temple doors, as you'd expect, although on religious buildings, the specific images are often not the same as those on regular houses. On the doors of average homes, the images are often two men in resplendent ancient Chinese armor, carrying weapons, and typically, if you pay attention, you'll find that one of these two men has fairly light complexion and Chinese features, while the other man has dark complexion and distinctly non-Chinese features, looking more South Asian than East Asian. These are the Door Gods. And the depictions are of two real historical figures. The Chinese-looking guy was Qin Shubao, or Qin Qiong. The South Asian-looking guy was Yu Chigong, or Yu Chijingde. Both were top generals who lived during and served the Tang Dynasty. The historic Qin Shubao lived from perhaps 571 AD to 638. And the historic Yu Chigong lived from 585 AD to 658 AD. The real Yu Chigong, by the way, was in fact not Han Chinese. Although neither was he South Asian. He was a member of the Xianbei race, one of the races that invaded or migrated into China from Inner Asia during the North and South dynasties. The Xianbei people were not known to have particularly dark skin, but Yu Chigong personally was described as having unusually dark complexion. Today we're going to talk about how it came to be that the standard door gods on Chinese doors came to be of these two gentlemen, and what that has to do with the 16th century novel, The Journey to the West. The Chinese have been putting things on doors to ward off evil for millennia. Of course, that's hardly unusual in traditional cultures. The Nazar amulet, or evil eye, is common across the Middle East. Jews have long placed mezuzahs on doorposts. In the case of the Chinese, the original belief seemed to be about the type of wood used rather than what it was carved or painted on it. Mahogany was thought to be best for warding off evil spirits. Then people started writing magical spells or painting images on the mahogany doors for luck. The custom apparently began during the Han Dynasty some 2,000 years ago. Records from the 6th century AD show that by that time, at least in southern China, the custom came to be to paint the two deities called Shen Shu and Yu Lü on one's doors. These were two deities first attested to in a Han Dynasty text and were both associated with mahogany and thought to ward off evil. Okay. So, presumably, from the North and South Dynasty down to the Tang Dynasty, and probably even centuries after, these two deities were the common images used as door gods. And then at some point, the tradition changed from using these two deities to depicting the real-life generals Qin Shubao and Yu Chigong. How? Well, one thing you have to appreciate is that Qin Shubao and Yu Chigong lived during the reign of Emperor Taizong of Tang. In fact, they both served Emperor Taizong. Taizong, whose portrait is the cover image for this podcast, came to be remembered as one of the great monarchs in Chinese history. And his reign, the 23 years known as the reign of Zhengguan, came to be remembered as a unique golden age. So, in the ensuing centuries, many legends arose set during that period, often involving real-life personalities from that time, including Emperor Taizong himself. One such story, which we know was around by the Yuan Dynasty or the Mongol era, so by the 14th century at the latest, involved Taizong as well as his loyal advisor, Wei Zheng. Emperor Taizong was a famously good ruler, in large part because he knew to listen to dissent. And Wei Zheng became famous in the annals of Chinese history because he was someone the emperor could always count on to tell him the unvarnished truth, however unwelcome, however uncomfortable. We know, by the way, that this story was around by the 14th century because it was included in the Yongle Encyclopedia, compiled in the early 15th century. Anyway, the story goes something like this. One day during the reign of Emperor Taizong of Tang, somewhere outside the capital city, Chang'an, by the river that runs past the city, a fisherman runs into his friend, a lumberjack. The lumberjack has just come out of the forest, and his friend, the fisherman, is on his boat on the river. The lumberjack and the fisherman start chatting, and the lumberjack comments that perhaps his friend is in the wrong line of work. Fishing, he says, is an uncertain business because you can never be sure of catching any fish on any given day. To this remark, his friend smiles and says, "Actually, I'm good. There's this fortune teller in the city. I go to see him once a day with a freshly caught fish, and he tells me where to look for fish the next day and at what hour. He is never wrong, and so I always go home with a full catch." What the fisherman doesn't realize is that underneath his boat, there are fish and shrimp listening to their conversation. Upon hearing this, the eavesdropping shrimp panic. If there's a fortune teller who always tells the fishermen where they are each day, how are they to survive? So they swim down to the bottom of the river, to the palace of the Dragon King. Okay, let me pause here for a second to explain. In Chinese culture, dragons are associated with water, not fire, as in European culture. They're thought to live in seas and rivers and lakes and so on, and are almost as much water creatures as fish are. And being alpha animals, not to mention magical ones, they're thought to run the bodies of waters where they live. So the Dragon King of the East Sea is in charge of the East Sea, and here we're dealing with the dragon that lives in this river, the Dragon King of this river. And also, the dragons are responsible for rainfall in the local areas where they live. Okay. Back to the story. The shrimp and the fish swim down to the palace and tell the Dragon King about this fortune teller. The Dragon King says, "Well, that's easy to deal with. We'll just go and kill him. We'll just kill this man, this fortune teller." But then his fish advisor says to him, "Sire, we don't even know if this guy is for real. The fisherman might have just been talking. Maybe it's all BS." The Dragon King says, "You're right. I shall go and investigate." Using his magic, the Dragon King transforms himself into a man, and he goes into the city of Chang'an. He finds the fortune teller's shop easily enough, and he goes in. He says to the fortune teller, "You know, I'm skeptical of you lot, of you so-called fortune tellers. How do I know that you're not a fraud out here swindling people of their money? The fortune teller replies, if you don't believe me, ask me to make a prediction. If events prove me wrong, you can have your money back. The Dragon King says, okay, but if you're wrong, if you're proven to be a fraud, then you know what? I don't want my money back. I want your shop closed down for good. The fortune teller says, fair enough. Now, what do you want to bet? The Dragon King says, how about you tell me this? Will it rain tomorrow? And if so, what time? And how much rain? The fortune teller says, yes, it will indeed rain tomorrow at so-and-so hour with this much rainfall. The Dragon King returns to his palace at the bottom of the river and tells his people what happened. They all laugh. Because, remember, the dragon is responsible for the local rainfall. So the Dragon King is in control of how much rain there will be and at what time. This seems like a bet that he cannot lose. But right as they are laughing, a messenger arrives from the Jade Emperor, the Emperor of the Gods who lives in the heavenly palace above. And the message says, tomorrow, be sure to give the Chang'an area this much rain at so-and-so hour. The requested amount of rain and the timing are exactly as the fortune teller foretold. The Dragon King is shocked. But still, he is determined to win the bet. So, on the following day, despite the order that came down from heaven, he deliberately changes the hour of the rain and the amount of rainfall. Then he goes to the fortune teller's shop and starts smashing things. You were wrong, he says to the fortune teller. And per the terms of our agreement, you must close down your shop. The fortune teller glares at him. I know who you are, he says. I've known since the moment you stepped into my shop, Mr. Dragon King. Don't you understand? You're in big trouble now. The Jade Emperor in heaven gave you a very specific command, and you disobeyed him deliberately. Don't you know that's a crime punishable by death? Thus reminded, the Dragon King falls into shock and collapses onto his knees. Oh, help me, he cries to the fortune teller. You who seem to know everything, tell me, how can I avoid execution? Please, you must save me. The fortune teller replies, well, I know who your divinely appointed executioner will be. It's none other than the current chancellor of the Tang Dynasty, Wei Zheng. Because of his fearlessness, which allows him to speak truth to power, even though he is a mortal, the gods in heaven entrust him with the job of serving as executioner of those immortal beings who disobey. If you can get Wei Zheng not to kill you, maybe you have a chance. The Dragon King thanks the fortune teller profusely and then departs for the imperial palace of the Tang Empire. The palace is of course guarded, but obviously the Dragon King can get past the guards without difficulties. He finds Emperor Taizong taking a stroll in his garden. The Dragon King tells Taizong what has happened and begs him to help. How can I help? Taizong asks. You see, Your Majesty, the Dragon King says, I'm scheduled to be executed tomorrow at noon. And my executioner will be none other than your chancellor, Wei Zheng. If you can somehow keep him from carrying out the execution at noon, I'll be okay. Emperor Taizong says, that's no problem. The grateful Dragon King goes away. The following morning, Emperor Taizong goes into court for affairs of state. And he looks for Wei Zheng. To his surprise, Wei Zheng is absent. It turns out that While he slept the previous night, Wei Zheng dreamed of being called by the gods to go and kill a dragon. So today he is at home, getting ready for the task. But now that Emperor Taizong asks for him, he hurries into court. Emperor Taizong then dismisses everyone else and invites Wei Zheng into the palace to, well, basically to hang out. They chat, they have tea, and then Emperor Taizong gets the servants to bring a chessboard. Or not chess, probably, but probably Wei Qi, or the game today known as Go in English. Wei Zheng and Emperor Taizong start playing. But as he plays, Wei Zheng starts to grow sleepy. He struggles against his lethargy, but ultimately he can't fight it, and he falls asleep. Emperor Taizong, sitting across the table, sees that his advisor and friend has fallen asleep. He thinks to himself, "Ah, the man works so hard for his country that he falls asleep in the middle of the day. I'll let him rest for a few minutes, rather than disturb him." After a little while, Wei Zheng wakes up with a start. He sees that he fell asleep in the emperor's presence, and he apologizes. Then he adds, "I just had the weirdest dream." "What was it?" Emperor Taizong asks. Wei Zheng replies, "I dreamt that I cut off a dragon's head." And that's when Emperor Taizong realizes that he has failed to keep his promise to the Dragon King. In the ensuing days, the ghost of the Dragon King starts haunting Emperor Taizong, terrifying him at night, keeping him from getting a good night's sleep, and taxing his health. This is a serious problem, because the emperor can't stay awake during the day, during business hours, and also because he is visibly growing sick. The ministers meet with the emperor to discuss what to do. Wei Zheng suggests, "Why don't we summon two of the bravest and fiercest warriors in the empire's service and have them guard the emperor's bedchamber?" Emperor Taizong agrees to this plan, and he summons, you guessed it, generals Qin Shubao and Yu Chigong. They proceed to stand guard outside the emperor's bedchamber that night. And sure enough, the spirit of the two incredibly manly, incredibly masculine and fierce warriors frighten off the ghost. The ghost of the Dragon King fails to show. They do it again the following night, and again, they succeed in deterring the ghost of the Dragon King. But then Emperor Taizong starts to feel bad for his generals, because now they don't get to sleep at night. So he orders the court painter to paint portraits of both of them and sticks them on his doors. Voila, it works. The ghost again fails to show. And so the two generals are relieved and get to go home at night. And from there, the story goes, at least the version I remember from childhood, the custom spread. Average citizens made copies of the portraits of Qin Shubao and Yu Chigong and used them on their own doors as well. In reality, what happened was that this story grew very popular during the Ming and Qing dynasties. And the popularity of the story led to people changing the images of door gods from earlier images to portraits of Qin Shubao and Yu Chigong. How did the story become popular? It was because some novels, a literary form that matured during the Ming dynasty, included this account. There was the Romance of the Sui and Tang Dynasties, published in 1695, which gave a version of this story. And, more importantly, The Journey to the West, one of the four great books of Chinese prose fiction, starring the famous Monkey King, first published in 1592, also included a version of this story. In fact, what I told you above is essentially the version in Journey to the West. Except in The Journey to the West, there's one more wrinkle. In the novel, the painted door gods actually ultimately fail to save Emperor Taizong, and he dies. But after spending three Christ-like days in the underworld, Emperor Taizong is allowed to return to the land of the living. In any event, so we get our depictions of Qin Shi Huang and Yu Shi Gong today as door gods, largely thanks to a work of fiction written in the 16th century, reflecting, obviously, an earlier legend. The Yale literature professor Harold Bloom liked to say that literature, if sufficiently well done, if sufficiently good, becomes religion. In the traditional folk belief and practices around door gods in Chinese societies, we see an example of this. All right. This has been MODG. Thank you very much for listening.